CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Friday is here.
Yes.
You've done what was required, and your reward is finally here. You get to have 2 days for yourself, including the fun of Friday, which is still my favorite day of the whole week. No contest. So there's quite a lot going on this morning. I'm happy to say we will be joined by Ben Karpinski later on. Ben, always a winner. And then later on by Joey Razdeen as well, who everybody loves. So Joey Razdeen, Ben Karpinski, sounds like a fun way to start your Friday. I hope that's what it'll be, because that's the whole reason we do this thing every Friday morning. I've got to say this up front, because otherwise I get into trouble with the people at YouTube and the people in management, and you know, they all tell me, oh, I've got to keep reminding everyone to like and subscribe. So do that, and then I won't bother you for the rest of the show. Ding, 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 ding. Like and subscribe. Done. Okay, perfect. So a couple of things on my mind this week. I've been reading a really interesting book, and I actually sent Dory, the producer, this guy's name yesterday, because I suddenly thought, you know what? This is someone we need to have on the show. He's a fascinating, fascinating person. Richard Heyer is his name. And I just had to look up the name of the book, because I read it a while ago, but I suddenly thought, this is a dude who we need to have on. He's an American psychologist. He's well known for his work in intelligence and in consciousness. So he talks quite a lot about a number of things, but he's written a book called The Neuroscience of Intelligence, The Intelligent Brain. And you know how often on this show we call people stupid or dumb, or we say, oh, that person's really smart. They, you know, they're the kind of person that I'd want to hear more from. Well, Richard Heyer has spent his entire life trying to figure out what intelligence actually means. He's come to the conclusion, and it's not just his conclusion, but it's the conclusion of a lot of scientists too. And I'll talk about it just a little bit this morning, because that's kind of the only gap I get during the week, is to talk on a Friday morning about stuff that interests me, that matters to me, that I think might matter to you. And, you know, the rest of the time it's me with a co-host, and there's always conversation, and that's the way we like the show to go. But every now and then I get a chance to just talk about the stuff that I've been reading or paying attention to. So he defines intelligence not as an IQ test. He says IQ tests are great for measuring intelligence. And by the way, he says that they are unassailable as the best test, the best known way to extrapolate and to understand and to measure intelligence. But he calls general intelligence G. You know, you've got a G rating. And he said your overall G is a very good indicator of your ability to do well in life. It's not the only one. He said there are lots of others. There's emotional intelligence. There's the ability to get along with people. There's charm. There's persuasion. There's affability. There's attractiveness. There's willingness to compromise. There are a whole lot of things in the world that will make you successful. But he said one of the best indicators that you can do very little about is intelligence. And he expounds for quite a long time in the book about the fact that we can't really do much to improve basic intelligence. In other words, if you test someone at the age of 9 or 10, and I think the youngest that they're supposed to be testing people at is about 12. They did this really interesting research in Scotland a couple of years ago. It was probably in the 60s, 70s, somewhere around there, where they tested the entire school population of Scotland. They gave everyone in Scotland who was 12 years old an intelligence test, an IQ test. And they then recorded those results along with information on those kids' backgrounds, you know, whether or not they grew up in a wealthy family or a poor family, whether or not they had access to books, what kind of schools they went to. And then they did those tests again, I think at the age of 20, could have been 18, I'm not exactly sure. And they compared the results. And they found that very, very little had changed, despite 5 years of high school education. Now, this is really what I thought was interesting, because we spend a huge amount of money on education in this country. And we always talk about how if we educate people, then they will be better equipped to deal with the world. And clearly that has some measure of truth to it, right? And he explains that in every decent piece of research ever conducted on intelligence. So, by the way, this is not his research. He's a psychologist, but he compiled all the research into this book. And he's very academic, and he's very peculiar about the way that he contains or includes the information that he puts into the book, that the book contains. It's not he's not trying to write a thesis himself. He's merely comparing all of the information and trying to make sense of what the idea of basic intelligence is. Because what they've done throughout time is they've also tried to figure out what consciousness is, consciousness being very separate from intelligence. And he's been trying to figure out whether there's a link between consciousness and intelligence. Either way, he looked at this Scottish research, for example, and there's plenty more where that came from. And he found that the amount of education that you can use to improve your general intelligence as opposed to your knowledge, you know, knowledge is very different to intelligence. He said, actually, it doesn't matter what school you go to. It doesn't matter how many books you read. It doesn't matter how what your socio-economic background is. In other words, if you have a lot of resources or you don't. According to him, your native intelligence is somewhere, it's established somewhere in your childhood. A lot of it is genetic. He said genetics make up an enormous percentage of this. And this is why this stuff is so controversial, because people like to think, well, when you have nature and nurture, they should be about equal. He says no. He says basically by the age of 9, 10, 11, it's all established. And after that, there's very little you can do to improve it. He says that education itself, the school, the teachers, the resources, the amount of money you'd spend, your home environment, all of that stuff will only make up 10% after your childhood, will only make up an improvement or a decline of 10% in the total. In other words, that's it. It's done. And I think that's really, really fascinating, because it means we have to reassess the way that we prioritize certain things in education. And if you don't get early childhood development education going, which is something that I've spoken to the First Lady of this country about in an interview, that's probably last year, middle of last year. And if you don't pay attention to people while they're young and they don't get the kind of input that they need. And by the way, even that, if you have an intelligent problem-solving brain, he says a lot of that is just in the genes. Now, this is terrifying to people who are like social engineers that think you can create an equal society by just giving everyone equal education, giving them the same amount of money. This flies in the face of that. It's kind of like, you know, the lottery of good looks, which we've often spoken about on this show, where if you're good looking, you just tend to get ahead better. People tend to like you more. And in this case, intelligence, which is not related to how nice a person you are at all. Intelligent people may be very nice people, and they may be absolutely horrendous people. And as I said at the beginning of this discussion, it's not the only measure of success. But he said it is the most valuable measure we have. And the IQ test is still the best way of doing that. You know, he talked about IQ tests for a long time too in the book. He explains how each of the questions, which he calls items, are novel. It's they have to be unfamiliar to you. In other words, if you've seen the question before, it won't measure your intelligence as accurately as if you've never seen it before. So they have to keep repopulating these tests with new questions. And essentially, the whole point and purpose of an IQ test is to test for pattern seeking, general consciousness. They ask you things like, for example, they ask you to give a sequence of numbers and then to be able to give that sequence of numbers backwards. So in an oral test, for example, they'll say 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and then you need to be able to go 10, 8, 6, 4, 2. And depending on the time, and it's important also that these tests are timed, that is a mark of intelligence. And he also refers to some very interesting things. For example, about 15 to 16% of the population of the United States is below IQ 83. And the U.S. Army will not take you. And they're always looking for a warm body, right? They will not take you if you have an IQ below 83 in the U.S. Army. You cannot do any positive good. You will do a net bad, not through being a terrible person. Again, I have to define these things carefully because it becomes extremely controversial for people. They get very upset and offended. They go, oh, well, then you're just writing off that number of people. Well, no. I think it's important to take note that in the American population, I mean, 15% is a lot. That's a lot of people. It's about 60 odd million people. And he says that those people, they're not useless, but they cannot hold a job. They cannot be required and relied upon to do simple tasks. And if your IQ is below 83, you are not able to make a meaningful contribution to society in terms of work. You could do repetitive labor. There are certain things that you can be taught to do, but it's very limited because your application is so much slower and so much less reliable than everyone else's. So this is an interesting dilemma, and we should be thinking about that in this country. And according to him, it's something everyone in the world should be thinking about. If a clear 15% of the population of the United States is unemployable, then, and that's a hardware problem, by the way, which we've also discussed here on the show. It's not a software problem. You can't fix that by educating people. They are just not educable. So this is where it gets really interesting. And I must tell you, I've always been fascinated by this. And that's the one component of it, is intelligence. But then there's consciousness, which he also goes into some analysis of. It's something that Sam Harris, who I listen to in podcasts very often, is obsessed with as well. And I think it's one half of an equation that will tell us an enormous amount about how our brains work. Intelligence is one part of it. Consciousness is the other. Consciousness, of course, has to do with how engaged you are in being alive and whether or not you are awake and paying attention, whether you are conscious on Earth or not, as a living, mortal, sentient creature. I brought up sentience with our guest, John Sane, on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I thought that what he said here was very interesting, because he says if intelligence can vary on a scale of, you know, 0 to 180, 200, they've measured some people's IQs to be up to 200, and some they speculate even beyond, although there's very little evidence for that. You know, the average intelligence, IQ, intelligence quotient is what it stands for, is usually 100. 100 is the mean. It is the average intelligence of the person who does the test, because you can't be sure. They might be really good at linguistic intelligence, so they can understand vocabulary and language. And, you know, again, these tests are best administered in the language the person speaks. But there's also numbers. There's also pattern recognition. And these things have very little to do with language. So you can eliminate the language questions, he says, and still get a very good idea of someone's IQ. But consciousness might also vary, according to Richard Hyde. And I thought this was a really mind-blowing idea, that some people are smart, they're intelligent, but they're not conscious. They're not as plugged in as other people are. And maybe there's a measure for consciousness too. You know, some people just kind of plod through life. They're not really engaged in anything. They're not really curious about anything. They don't listen to you when you talk to them. They really aren't paying attention. And they're driven kind of almost more by automaton kind of behavior and maybe instinct than anything else. And then you get people who are very, you know, plugged in. They're exhausting to be around. At the far end, they are these, you know, tremendously hyper, somewhat manic, kind of crazy people who are, they're difficult to follow. They're exhausting to keep up with. I wonder if he has a point about that, and whether we'll ever get to the stage in human evolution and in science and in the science of the brain where we'll be able to imagine measuring consciousness, because that would be a fascinating endeavor. So that's what I've been reading at the moment. And I see lots of comments here, which I'm going to get to in a second. But, you know, a lot of people dismiss IQ tests, and you're entitled to do that. But it doesn't make a damn difference what you think about this. It is still the best way to figure out whether someone is going to be successful or not. They've proven this time and time again. As Jordan Peterson always says, the two best measures for overall success, and remember, success doesn't equal happiness either. You can be a very successful person and be tremendously unhappy, and it doesn't equate to being a good person either. You could be an awful person and be really intelligent. You can be a very, very smart person, and everyone despises and dislikes you, and you might be very unhappy too. Those are not necessarily related to this. So you've got to figure out what your priorities are. If your priorities are happiness, success, forming important and meaningful relationships with people, these are all different things, and they don't all go together. It's not to say that intelligence will give you a 10 out of 10 score in all of those. It definitely won't. But it is the greatest mark of success, along with what Jordan Peterson, to get back to him for a second, calls conscientiousness, which is a personality factor. So these things are really interesting, and I want to talk to Dr. Hanan, among others. I'd also like to speak to Professor Szabo about these things now that I've read about them. But this is really interesting, and I'm sure that there are lots of comments here in the YouTube comments that will get us all thinking. Take how many genius people don't finish school. Well, that's exactly right, because, again, school doesn't seem to have a massive impact on people's overall intelligence. If your mother organized Puzza Thursdays, says Parallel Parking, while she was pregnant, you are going to be pissed at your IQ results. Well, that's true. I mean, we've got very good evidence in education that the people who have fetal alcohol syndrome, or who grow up with parents who abused substances during their pregnancy and or conception and or early childhood, are at a huge disadvantage. So these are facts which are uncomfortable for people to deal with. Michael says, finally, a bit of an intellectual subject, no pun intended. I like today's video. Yeah, well, thanks, Michael. I mean, you know, again, he says, I tease, I love the show, mostly on certain days. Okay, great. IQ tests are false. You can train for IQ tests. No, you can't. The point is, you can't have questions that you've seen before. I mentioned that already. Oh, damn, that's depressing, says Andy. Here I am studying my ass off for what now? Well, knowledge is different to intelligence. So you're not going to get smarter, but you will get more knowledgeable. I mean, I know a lot of stupid, pointless, useless facts about, you know, ancient history, for example, but that doesn't mean I'm intelligent. You might not want me to solve a problem for you. I might be better positioned to teach you about, you know, the emperors of ancient Rome than I would be to solve a problem. Who knows? I mean, I haven't done an IQ test since I was at high school. And I remember I did one with the Human Sciences Research Council a while ago. And, well, it was also on my way into varsity. And they did give me the result, but I don't attach too much importance to that stuff. I really, just because I think it can be either very motivating for some people or very demotivating for others. I mean, mine came out at, I think it was 152 or 154 or somewhere around there, which is supposedly very intelligent, but I don't know that that's true. So, I mean, I did do the Mensa thing. I remember I did it with Damon. We both went, and it was really more to humiliate Damon than anything else, and we succeeded. So Damon and I went and sat for the Mensa test, and I got in and he didn't. And then, of course, I didn't stay a member because I think that's really just the cheesiest organization of all. So what do you do with an average IQ of 70 here in South Africa? Is that true, G-Star? Is that actually true? I don't know that that's true, that we have an average IQ of 70 in South Africa. If it is, if it's true that we have an average IQ of 70, we've got a major, major problem. Why aren't people losing IQ every decade? No, we are. They have to adjust the IQ to make 100 the mean. And humans are generally becoming more intelligent, but that's generational. So what happens is that every generation, the overall human population gets a little bit smarter. So they have to keep on adjusting the 100 down, I suppose. No, up. I have to keep adjusting it up so that all the people who are being tested still form an average. As you must guess, if you're trying to get to an average, then you adjust with the population going up in intelligence, you have to adjust up. If the IQ test was used to get a driver's license, public transport would become way more efficient. Well, again, like, you've got to be careful what you do with this stuff. And the application is hugely controversial, because people say if you use IQ as a measure for things in actual human interaction, or if everybody knew everybody else's IQ, it would be a means of discriminating. Without doubt, it would be a means of discriminating, because you would far rather have someone with a high IQ doing a job than someone with a low one. So it's interesting to know this stuff. And again, I read this purely as someone who's interested in how the brain works. What about EQ, says Rebellious Ruth? Well, EQ is a bit of a made-up concept. There's no way to measure it, and therefore it's not particularly useful. There are personality tests you can do to determine whether or not someone has a, you know, more communicator or planner-type personality, which would give them a higher EQ. Usually the analyst driver types do not. But I'm no expert in this field, and EQ is, as far as I know, not a scientific term. It is a psychological term, and it is used in pop psychology, and it's used by people in the workplace, and it's used by people in, you know, in general society as a measure of your ability to be affable, likable, compromising, understanding, emotionally aware. All of that stuff is valuable, obviously. But as far as I know, you don't get an EQ score. And if you do get an EQ score and you want to correct me, please tell me where the literature is and I'll be happy to go and read it. But it seems to me to be one of those things that's more pop psychology than it is science. And remember, that line is blurred, hey? That's why psychologists are not considered real scientists by people in neuroscience, but there is an overlap. There's obviously an overlap. They're both studying the brain from different areas. G-Star says EQ is a bullshit term used by people who cannot handle the IQ literature. Yeah, but if we only have IQ, we also have a problem. Because, as I said earlier, you can be a terrible person and have a very high IQ. I'm sure that a lot of awful people in history have had very high IQs. But your ability to get people to do things, your ability to get consensus on something, your ability to lead and gather people around you, has very little to do with IQ and a huge amount to do with your general emotional awareness and your ability to connect to people. It's not necessarily an IQ thing. So be careful not to say, well, this is the superior characteristic, and throw out all the others. I love Jordan Peterson, says Rebellious Ruth. He's such a straight arrow. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's also been weaponized by the right as a political agent, and he's been despised by the left. So you get people who denounce him as a complete fraud because they don't like his politics. And then you get people who praise him without ever bothering to actually listen to what he's saying, just because the end result of what he's saying suits their political narrative. Unfortunately, that's happening everywhere. And I have no doubt that even conversations about intelligence will be harnessed by political actors in order to be put to use in their favor. They'll either say, oh, well, it's all bullshit, we must abandon the whole idea, which is ridiculous because there isn't a better measure for general intelligence and success, as I mentioned earlier. Or They will say it's the only way we should measure things, and we should force everyone to do an IQ test, and we should just stratify society along those lines, which would be terrible. It would be no different to, you know, to discriminating with people on the basis of looks or the basis of skin color or the basis of gender. Not a good idea, trust me. Andy says Wayne Dyer is also great. I'm not familiar with Wayne Dyer, but I have heard the name. According to the stoned ape theory, you can improve your intellectual capabilities by chowing a few mushrooms. Well, yeah, the stoned ape theory is interesting. I don't know that there's been a whole lot of research done since that book was published. And the funny thing about IQ is since the bell curve, which was Charles Murray's book, there hasn't been a whole lot of literature on IQ either, because people are terrified of studying this because they get into so much trouble. You know, you have to go, as this professor who wrote the book said, you have to go where the data takes you. And sometimes it takes you into uncomfortable places. School should teach us how to think, or to think rather, and not to copy paste without thinking. Well, clearly, but I mean, so much of school is just really, really rudimentary stuff. And you don't even come out of school with a basic understanding. You know, people come out of school with very low levels of literacy and numeracy in South Africa, which is something we should all be very concerned about. Monique says, I love this subject, Gareth. I think the school system fails us terribly. Yeah, it does. And according to all of this, it doesn't matter what school you go to. It can only make a 10% difference. Now, obviously, if you have a horrible school where the teachers are never there, and you never study, and there are no books, and you can't read, and you don't have access to the internet and all of that stuff, then you are at a tremendous disadvantage. But the entirety of that disadvantage will account for 10% of your overall intelligence if you're already beyond the age of, let's say, 12. And that's scary, because it means if you haven't done the important adjustments in early childhood, and if your genes are just not on your side, you got no chance of being the next Nobel Prize winner. That's just it. So it's an unfair thing, and people don't like unfairness, but that's unfortunately how it works, whether you like it or not. You just got to follow the data, right? Ethan says it's already a means of discrimination where intelligence, you don't need a test, which you can actually train for, you tell your intelligence, the hoax of the Western world. No, that's bullshit, Ethan. It just is. I'm sorry. You're wrong, and that's a very unintelligent thing to say. Sharon says, does one's IQ change during the lifetime? No. As I said at the beginning, they did this test on Scottish kids, and they found that between age 12 and 18, there was very little movement of IQ up or down. Interestingly enough, they also found that there's a small bit of data around large families, and the fact that the eldest in those families is usually the more intelligent. So I can't wait to tell my brother and sister that, because I'm the eldest. But just marginally, they found that usually, and again, there's not enough research that's been done to corroborate this. It hasn't been replicated. But usually, the eldest is just a little bit higher in IQ than the rest. But it's not always true. So they found there's a probability that the eldest will be the smartest, but it's not always true. So let's see. IQ is a cuck subject to study. It's so false. Well, you see, all you're doing is saying it's nonsense, but you're not giving me any evidence to the contrary. And I don't believe that you're a scholar of this stuff, Ethan. It does actually matter what school you go to. No, it doesn't. I'm telling you what I've read. You're welcome to take on this professor if you have any other innovative, thoughtful research, but I don't believe you've done any. So you're going to just throw it out because you know better? You're wrong, he says. No, I'm telling you what I've read. I'm not saying this is true. This is what I've read from someone who's studied this stuff his entire life. He's just retired. Go and read the book, Ethan, and then tell me what you think. But you haven't read the book, and you're just arguing with me because you don't like the conclusions. All right, let's get Ben in here, and let's see what Ben has to say. Hey, morning, Ben. How are you?
Screw you, Ethan.
Yeah. No, he just says you're wrong. You're just wrong.
That's funny. Yeah, pretty good. Thanks, Gareth. Pretty good. Interesting subject about IQ. I've always wanted to take an IQ test. I don't think I ever have. I'm quite curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's not gonna reveal some, like, if you've always thought you were a bit dumb and then you go and do the test and then it proves it to you, is it gonna make you feel better or make you feel worse? And if you've, what I would love is for people who think they're really, really smart to go and sit down and do one and come back with like a terrible result and then humbles them a little bit. That's fun. I think that's necessary.
Yeah. But the whole thing about school, like I always thought, and I think we talked about this, but I always thought homeschool was really bad. But actually, geez, if it's like the certain schools you go to nowadays, and just think like kids, they'll go to school now and they'll be taught about this pronoun bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's going to mess you up for life.
Of course.
There's certain things because schooling now is so cut and pasty, and we aren't encouraged to think at all because thinking is very right wing and murderous to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think homeschooling, like if you've got the means, the capacity and the interests, that could actually be really good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that existing on Earth is it's a partly struggle and it's partly the most amazing thing that you could experience, right? And you have to decide if you're going to let it be mostly struggle in your head or let it be the most exciting adventure you could ever go on. Because there's a healthy balance. Like, it's important that you realize that it's not always going to be easy and that when things aren't going your way, that's not the universe ganging up on you or being unlucky or it's everyone else's fault. It's just part of what you're here to learn. And at the same time, if you just go through it like it's an, you know, it's a terrible struggle, you're just never going to have any enjoyment and your life's going to be pretty depressing. You know, so find that healthy medium and then you can have a good life. You can have a meaningful life. And it doesn't always have to be about intelligence, success, good looks, athletic achievements, awards, the whole world liking you or not liking you. Sometimes it's just about your own sense of satisfaction. So there's a lot to talk about there. But I do think this intelligence thing is fascinating. And I will be reading more books about it because this one was very absorbing. I made it through it in about 3 or 4 days. Anyway.
Yeah, the thing about intelligence is that people just think it's like you are or you aren't. And yeah, many people should get more into it. But just to finish off on that school thing, like most schools are just so cookie cutter-ish and you just get literally you get made into a certain thing. But if like there's technical needs, like if your kid has special needs, then sure, there's certain schools that have to be sent to. If you want to play a certain sport and sport's going to be the upbringing that you want for your kid, you have to go to certain schools. And that is like, those things are obviously not for debate. Those are true.
But those like also have nothing to do with intelligence. So what this guy's doing is he's measuring it and he's looking purely at intelligence. And he's also got an interest in consciousness. And those are the only two areas he cares about. So this book is about those. It's not about raising the next generation of, you know, kind, caring, thoughtful adults. That takes a lot more than just IQ. He's just looking at a measure of general intelligence and across all the variables, trying to figure out what it is that we can do to improve or to change someone's intelligence. And it turns out not very much. So I think that's interesting. Anyway, so that's what I've been reading. And now we spent a whole half hour talking about it. So there's lots more to get into.
That good.
That good. Well, I hope so. We'll have to see. Monique says, I wonder what the IQ was of ancient Greek philosophers. Has that been researched? Well, it's very difficult to do because you can't sit them down and make them do an IQ test.
They're a bit dead.
They're a bit dead. And, you know, you can say, for example, that someone like Pythagoras was tremendous as a problem solver. He came up with equations for us to measure and to be able to figure out basic geometry. So he must have been a very smart guy.
Was he a problem solver or a problem maker? through high school, that dickhead got me all kinds of problems.
That's also true. Did you know that IQ is inversely related to penis size, says Rajesh. I'm hung like a horse. They're doing research. And this is again somewhere where, you know, you get into trouble just for asking these questions. If you have more kids, are they all going to be more or less intelligent than if you have one kid? And it's not the answer that I think you expect in the minimal amount of research that has been done around this. They say there's no effect across the board for whether you have many or one kid. Because people often think, well, if I have the one child, I can really put all the effort into this child and make sure that it's, you know, you often see like single child families where they put an enormous amount of pressure and time and effort and energy into this kid, and then they end up just being pretty ordinary. I mean, not all only kids are tremendous. We all know this. We all know some only kids. Some of them are fantastic, but then sometimes the fifth kid in a family of seven is an absolute genius through no effort of the parents. You know, they made no effort whatsoever because it was the fifth out of seven. They basically let the other kids raise that one, and it's smart. So a lot of this is just in the genes.
Like, parenting is also quite a lot of guiding. If you push the kid too hard into certain things, that's when they become drug addicts and layabouts. Yeah. You give them a bit of time to grow. It's like when you grow grapes for wine in vineyards, you don't water that thing every single day. You let it almost die, basically. So it has to really fight for survival.
Right.
And in order to do so with the limited amount of resources, it produces wonderful grapes that make, obviously, wonderful wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar with kids, I think, on a slightly separate note.
Let's just leave this intelligence thing alone for another day, because I don't want to go too deep into the reads. I've already explained some of the basic findings that I took out of the book, but you're welcome to go and read it for yourself and tell me what you think of it. It's called The Neuroscience of Intelligence, The Intelligent Brain. It's by Richard J. Heyer, H-A-I-E-R. Go and take a listen. Tell us what you think. All right. let's see. We've got a couple of things on the agenda for this morning. There's something that Ben and I have been wanting to talk about for a very long time. Why is it that when women do bodybuilding, not become like fitness models, because that's a different thing entirely, but why is it that when women become bodybuilders, they get very, very deep voices? Is it because they take steroids? Is it because they take testosterone? Or is it because the muscles change the sound of their voice? And maybe that comes after the steroids and the testosterone. So it could be a combination of those things. But I've got a couple of clips to play for you, and you tell us what you think. I mean, I'll start off with someone who's not a bodybuilder. Her name is Charlotte, and she's got a very, very deep voice. She lives in Melbourne, Australia, and here she is in this video complaining about how people are mean to her because she has a deep voice. And I always think it's really funny if a man has a squeaky high voice, and I think it's really funny if a girl has a deep, like powerful, male-like sounding voice. But it's also something, you know, what are you going to do? Charlotte here is not a bodybuilder, but I do think it would be interesting to hear her voice. And then we've got two others. Here's Charlotte. Take a listen to her.
Hi, my name is Charlotte. For those who don't know, I'm 22 years old and I am from Australia, specifically Melbourne. I'm just going to briefly run down what I've been through in my lifetime. All through high school, I was picked on because of my voice. I was called a male. I was called transgender. I was called... You know, that I wasn't going to ever meet someone, that I was going to be single for the rest of my life, that I was going to die alone. I'd have food thrown at me in class. I would have chairs thrown at me. I would have bruises on my body. And it was just an awful, awful time in my life. And yet still to this day, I get bullied. And I just think, why do it? Like, are you that unhappy with yourself that you just feel the need to make someone feel like...
Yeah. All right. So pretty funny voice. I can't help when I hear someone like that laughing, and I wouldn't have thrown a chair at her, but I probably would have laughed. So I'm not.
If I was her dog, I would not get lost in the park. Imagine that chick shouting at you for like an hour.
Rover, come here.
Sound like Thanos.
Yeah. That's pretty rough. She's obviously a sweetheart, but cheap as that voice is.
it's pretty deep.
That's something. But to throw a chair. Wow. I mean, like,
that's
like
horrible.
Between the two of us, we say some shitty things, but imagine who you've got to be to throw a chair at someone because you hate their voice.
Horrible.
Wow.
So I've got two bodybuilders. The one is interviewing the other one. They both have quite deep voices, but not as deep as you'd expect. And then there's a Russian woman that I'll play for you, and you can figure out whether you think maybe she's got a deeper voice than is usual. So here's the interview one. First of all, both of these girls, bodybuilders, if you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. You'll always get great stuff like this that you won't get anywhere else. But take a look at these two and then listen to them, all right? All right, there we go. There she is. That is the interview.
Walker here, and I'm at the 2020 IFBB Optimum Classic Pro in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I'm here with Women's Physique Pro Caridad Sola.
Doing good. I'm happy to finally be here. It's been quite a challenge with the hurricane and everything thrown at our ways this year. I got really lucky. I originally had my plans to fly in Thursday. I changed it to Wednesday just to have more time to settle in. Had no idea a storm was coming. So I would say November.
Right, I'm going to stop it there anyway. I mean, that's enough. Now, she doesn't have a deep voice, but that's definitely a strange tone. Don't you think?
So there's two things, and again, maybe I should do more scientific research here, but you get the deep voice, yeah, which I reckon is just down to hormonal kind of things, but then you get the sort of like almost deep into squeaky trumpet voice, and I almost believe that out of all the heavy lifting, all the heavy squatting and deadlift, that the vocal cords actually become like strained because you go,
is that what you think it is?
You're pushing out groans and things. I think it's something along those lines because... And then what happens is that your body is trying to fight back and trying to be feminine so hard that it just throws whatever it can at the deepness, and then it becomes squeaky.
And you said trumpety. I think that's a good word.
It is quite trumpety.
All right, let's just look at the comments quickly before we move on. Hanging out with Jay says there are clearly some on testosterone and supplements, because wow. Why is there always an echo when you play clips? I'm not sure. I think it could be because I put my mic on. Never understood bullying. Like, what the fuck? You mad that I'm ugly? Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make sense. Her jaw looks very manly. Yes, but that is, again, Ben, that has to be hormone steroids, right? Has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I mean, you just keep producing this testosterone artificially. Your body does change. It just, that's all it does.
Let's listen.
You become more manly. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You become more manly.
Let's listen to this Russian girl, because she's definitely the most manly voice I've ever heard, and she's also a bodybuilder, fitness woman. But in terms of contrast, this is the best one so far. Right.
The powerful female bodybuilder amazed the world by setting a deadlift record of 530 pounds and a bench press record of 375 pounds.
Ну, безусловно, на люди, конечно, обращают внимание, потому что, ну, спортивные фигуры видны под одеждой. Вот, но многие меня уже узнают, то есть, ну, потому что довольно известно и здесь, и за границей, то есть просят там сфотографироваться, многие меня уже по имени знают. Ну, конечно, я думаю, любая женщина...
All right, that's enough. I think she also...
What do you mean that's enough? Some guys were, like, getting into that.
I think she also has a speech impediment, so it's hard to, you know, figure. But that's a deep voice, man. That's a very deep voice. She's got something going on there.
Like, when she's on the phone to someone, yeah, that's clearly a man.
Well, if you see, again, like, this is why the world of transgender is so interesting, because people will get upset with you. But if that woman, who is a woman... And she's not a man who transitioned into a woman, so she wasn't born biologically male. She's female. She's always been female, as I understand it. If she called a place for a takeout meal, and she said, "Hi, it's me. I'm ordering for," you go, "Yes, sir." And she probably gets that all the time. And I wonder if she gets upset when they call her sir, you know, as opposed to ma'am.
So, Gareth, I've got a slightly different take on all this, because, I mean, the voices are quite something. Because that poor woman in Australia, she literally fucking woke up with that.
Yeah,
she has
right.
No choice. Mm. She's bad Thanos by birth. She just right. Didn't have any luck. But you know, I always believe that life and society in the world is always fighting for balance. For all this stupid fuckery, there's people who are hugely intelligent who are going the other way. For all, like, throughout civilization, right? So... I want to know, were there like female bodybuilders, and were there so many of them back when, as they say, men were men, as in like tougher times, you know, like when men were going off to fighting wars, were girls going to the gym to go deadlift 500 kilograms?
We already know we already know the answer to that. It's no. Women bodybuilders have always been a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the total female population. And it's probably at the highest it's ever been now. What do you think because of?
But that's exactly my point. I reckon they're at the highest now, and obviously the internet has made them more visible, which is obviously a thing. But I think because men are probably softer and more effeminate, are lost now than ever, there's more women bodybuilders and more women who are going to gym and doing these kind of things. I don't have the numbers. I don't have the numbers. This is Friday science. But I really believe that the more you see of this is a reflection of where men are, because it's always working in a balance. And it's not because every woman's like, well, I also want to lift weights. No woman wants to lift weights. No one grew up going, yeah, I really want to deadlift 500 kilograms. That's a really, really, really niche thing. But the more that they get sort of like put into a position where they need to be stronger in life, because men aren't,
I think it's a symptom of men becoming more simpering and weak.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's call that Prince Harry syndrome, shall we?
Yes.
Just to give it a name so that we can all so we can be clear what we're talking about when we bring it up in a greater context later on. So we can say it's Prince Harry syndrome.
So then to go even further, then we could say those women have Prince Harry voices. It's voices brought on by the Prince Harry syndrome.
All right. I mean, maybe that's a good theory. We'd have to test it out and under laboratory conditions figure out whether that's the reason that so many women are becoming bodybuilders. If there is an increase, which we don't know, it might also be very fashionable at the moment. You know, like high heel shoes have become more or less fashionable at certain times in human history, or short dress or long dress. There might be an explanation that's simpler than we think.
Yeah, but I mean, like high heels and a short dress and a long dress, those are purchases that anyone can do. Being a bodybuilder is damn hard.
It's a life.
That is a commitment. It's a life. It's a complete change of everything that you do. Mm. Everyone thinks that, oh, I'll just take steroids or whatever and I'll get muscles. No, that's not how it works. You have to work so hard to get muscles, even if you are on steroids. So it's not really a trend. I think people are physically changing because of the environment.
You just said something interesting, and I think that I didn't immediately think this, and it's not something that seems intuitive or all that obvious. Just taking testosterone or steroids is not going to give you muscles. You still have to do the exercise, right?
Completely.
If you just take those things and you don't do exercise, you just become a marshmallow.
Well, I mean, look, it's always different because everyone's got a different hormonal breakdown and sort of mixed, and some people have really good genetics and are just quite well muscled. Mm-hmm. But your average person to go and jab something in your ass, you're not suddenly going to get amazing traps and delts and pec and all that kind of stuff. You know, you really have to work. You have to. And
because I do hear like a lot of people who hate fit people, and there are people like that, just like there are people who hate fat people, and just like there are people who don't like short people or whatever. There are, you know, everybody has their prejudices, whether they're fair or not, that's up to the audience. But I hear a lot of people saying, well, you know, they just take a lot of steroids, but they kind of write them off as being, shortcut people who don't actually exercise. But you're telling me you need to take them in combination to get enormously big.
Yeah. Look, I will say categorically, I will never take steroids. I probably won't even take growth hormone, although when you get older, everyone seems to do it. Mm. All of Hollywood's been on that, and that's why those guys still have hairlines. But no, I mean, you have to work so incredibly hard. Like, I had a podcast recently with Clinton Funderburg, who wrote a book. He wrote a book about steroid use and basically drug cheats in sports. And it is. It's a very murky kind of place. Like, you've got to be so committed. Don't just think you can do steroids for, like, a couple of weeks and see how it goes. If you really want the benefits, and when you see those big people who get written off as just steroid users, sure, they are taking shortcuts. They are taking steroids. They are taking extra. But shit, they've worked hard. They really
have. When you brought Clinton into the studio, I was at the office, and it was interesting to meet him. And I was curious about what I haven't listened to the episode yet, but I'm going to. You spent a fair amount of time with him, and you've read the book. It sounds like a really interesting study. It sounds like something that we should be paying attention to.
Well, people have been cheating, Gareth, since. Well, for a long time, okay? And the thing about sport is that it's a reflection of society. So if we have criminals and corruption and all that kind of stuff in general society, trust me, it's going to be in sport. And we see it now.
Because
I believe this transgender stuff, that's basically, it's cheating like anything else. You're getting unfair advantages. So just to very briefly give you like an understanding of what drugs and sport actually mean is that people test for drugs because they want to prevent people from taking something that gives them an advantage.
Right.
It harms them potentially, or it's against the spirit of sport. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, if you rock me up with a cock, that's against the spirit of women's sport. That's not a scientific take. That's just me being by the book. So it's such an interesting, I had such an interesting chat with him, and I wish I could have chatted longer. But the book is great because it's not like a salacious tabloidy rant about Lance Armstrong this or Ben Johnson that.
Yeah.
It's breaking into the lives of like, everyone makes a choice in life and everything they do. And people make a choice to take these drugs. They look at it and go, I might not be able to keep being a sports person unless I do this right now. And yes, I might get bust for it. But if I don't get bust, I can prolong my career. Mm-hmm. If I do get bust, I'm fine. I'm banned. Okay. But that might be the same exact situation if I don't get stronger.
Right.
And schoolboy sports, SA rugby is a major thing at high school level. And steroid use is just so prolific.
Among school kids?
Yeah. But the most interesting thing about this is that a lot of steroid use is from kids who don't actually play sport. They just want to get big for the holidays.
That's amazing. So it's not to do with being in the first team rugby team or being selected as a, you know, young Springbok or whatever. It's really just to look good on the beach.
That's exactly what it is.
Wow.
And you'll see it more and more. I mean, now that I've read this book and I've had this long chat with Clinton, and I look at steroids very differently, I'm very, very curious about it. And like I said to him, you know, like, what happens if Usain Bolt had to start doing this? Like, what could have been the outcome?
Right.
And I always believe, like, if you look at sports entertainment, right? And I've always said this, it's nothing more special than that. Mm-hmm. It's people entertaining, just like movie stars. So what if there was like a year where we took certain athletes? So if you look in golf right now, there's this breakaway thing called the Live Golf, which we all spoken about. It's basically millions of Saudi money.
Yes.
The guys in their prime are taking that and going, so what if, again, maybe just go to the Saudis for this. What if they spend all this money to take top athletes right now and for a season with awesome doctors and that kind of stuff, gave them a chance to just take the right steroids, do everything perfectly? Mm-hmm. I would love to see. And it literally is. It's like a school of excellence, right? Cheating. But they basically do their own Olympics and they set their own drug world records. That would be the most watched sporting event on earth.
Oh, for sure.
By far.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
The drug Olympics. But
if you did the normal Olympics and you did the drug Olympics, the audiences for one would be a quarter of the audiences for the other, and you can guess which one would be bigger. I just want to quickly go to this before we wrap up this hour. I mean, this has been really interesting. Vincent says, my sticky had a voice like an angel, and it changed over time while doing bodybuilding. I know that she's on the juice. She's still a woman, I think. Vincent, you bastard. It's unbelievable. Sam says, I can't speak for all the girls, but I weightlift because I find it fun. It's probably the Scottish in me. Hey, listen, we're not saying there's anything wrong with bodybuilding. I mean, certainly not. I think, you know, there's something admirable about it. If you, as Ben said, it's a life. If you throw yourself at anything and you become the best at it, who the hell are we to criticize you? You know, you could quite easily point the finger back at us and say, well, it's hardly like you two are fucking great specimens. And we would deserve it. So, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously there's levels. There's like a big thing between lifting weights and like the first girls that we showed you just now. That's something else. It really is something else.
Some guys are into that, hey? Vincent says you have to work hard to gain muscle. Then you have to take the steroids to help you get bigger faster. Oh, and your pecker shrinks. Vincent's on fire this morning.
Well, Vincent's not wrong either.
It's true, right? It does shrink your balls. Well,
it kind of shrinks your balls. It doesn't shrink your actual beef,
right,
so to speak.
Linda says, I still think Gareth had the best idea years ago. One Olympics where everyone gets tested, and the second one they can take whatever they want. Yeah, and look, if their hearts end up exploding 10 minutes after the race, but they won in like record time, what a way to go if that's what you've dedicated your life to, you know?
Yeah, but if you do it, no, but that's the thing. It's like, this isn't an 80s movie. If you do it right, you know, like, it's healthier to do the Tour de France on drugs than it's not. So
really?
If you do it right with the right doctors. Yeah, well, the Tour de France is not, it's not a healthy thing to do. It's very bad for you. Really, really bad for you, because you can never recoup the calories that you spend. You're losing bone density, I'm sure, because of all the exertion. It's a really shit thing to do for 2 weeks of your life. And that's why they all look like concentration camp victims when they're finished.
Yeah.
So if you're on the drugs, it's actually healthier. So with the right doctors, you could have the doping games and nobody would die. They would just be really, really, really amazing.
Parallel Parking says, working with weights, even if only the weight of your own body, becomes important as we age to keep our bones strong. Everyone needs to weightlift at some point or fade and fall over.
Yeah, it's like I've always said to people my age now. It's like they go, oh, you know, I run 5Ks 3 times a week. It's like, well, you might as well sit in the toilet because it's just it's so bad. You need to have resistance training in your life. Otherwise, you're going to lose the bone density. Mm. And then you fall over when you're old.
And also, like, your bones crack.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't 5K someone up. You can't 5K, like, a kid off a ledge. You've got to lift, push, pull, fight, do forceful things in life. 5Ks.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Speaking of which, says Boiled Prawn Shack, I see that Leah Thomas has been nominated by Penn State for NCAA Woman of the Year. I wonder how history will judge us. I almost think that that is a kind of overreaction by, you know, left-wing people at Penn State because she has been thrown out of competing against other women. So I think they're almost doing this as kind of a fuck you, which is fine. I mean, you know, people are going to do that.
No, so, but it's also just Penn State, as they say, trying to get on the right side of this. This is the terminology.
Yeah. You see, so many people just want to be liked. They just want everyone to think they're nice people. And if you boil everything down, from the conversation about intelligence to the whether or not you take steroids to improve your body, to having a deep voice or a squeaky voice or a trumpety one, everybody in the world, with very few exceptions, they just want to be thought of as a nice person. That's all. They just want people to go, oh, well, Ben is a nice person. Gareth's a nice person. Ethan, Ruth, Thurin's, Clint, they're all nice. They're nice people, which I think is just such a low barrier to entry and such a if that's all you're aiming for, then, you know, once you've achieved it, then what? I mean, where do you move on from there? Because that's kind of low-hanging fruit. Don't you think? To be a nice person, to have people think that you're a good person.
If you look after kids, cool, be nice. Outside of that, you don't need me to be nice.
Looking after kids is the only place you need to be nice. Is that it, Ben?
Yeah, well, you want to drop the kids off at a place where people are nice. Right. Outside of that, I don't need you to be nice. Just be good at something of value. That's what I'm constantly searching for.
Anything. I haven't found it yet. As long as you find one thing that you're good at. That would be nice.
But be good at it, because then you're adding value to society. Again, I'm still busy with that, and if I come close.
Well, we've got some interesting stuff in the next hour for you, including how people meet in 2022 as opposed to in previous years. We'll talk about emoji history and a whole lot more. So stick around. Joey Razdeen also is going to be joining us, so that's awesome. Aware Masakan coming up next. That's Joey Razdeen. CliffCentral.com.